I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Shel Goldman. He's a psychotherapist, and he's leading a number of workshops and events in the month of August on the subject of gender reconciliation. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. Good morning.
Good morning. Now, when you think of reconciliation, you kind of think of reuniting people who were once enemies, like post-conflict reconciliation, things like that. How does that apply to men and women?
Well, that's a great question. You know, traditionally, there were councils of reconciliation, especially in some indigenous groups where different members of the tribe would get together and work out their issues by giving both parties equal time to be heard, to be listened to be understood. So I think this whole concept is maybe more in modern times related to the Truth and Reconciliation Councils that came out of South Africa in the work that they were doing there. It very much is in alignment with that. It relates to basically giving men and women a safe environment to be able to listen to each other and to actually learn about each other. I don't know of any other environments where men and women can sit and learn by listening to each other's stories. And that's a big part of reconciliation, is really being heard, being seen, being understood.
There is a saying which you probably know, which is something like an enemy is a person whose story I haven't heard.
Correct.
What happens when you, I mean, you've done a lot of this work. You've been a psychotherapist for 25 years, right, and you've been doing this work for quite a while as well. What is the, like, what does it look like when men and women get together and listen to each other?
Well, I'll tell you what it first doesn't look like. And years ago, there was an experience here in Santa Fe, maybe 20 years ago, and good-meaning people decided to have a gathering where men and women could come and have an open forum. And I went to that forum years ago, and within about 10 minutes, you could begin to see the pain, hurt, anger that lies beneath the surface that men and women carry start to come to the surface, because the coordinators or facilitators had not set up a safe environment, had not set up agreements, had not done anything to provide an environment that was going to work. And I kept noticing my chair going farther back to the wall, farther back to the wall. The heat was rising. That's not what this is about. What we work at Gender Reconciliation International, what we do is really create a safe environment by first really sitting down with men and women and creating some agreements. And these agreements become something that are our foundation and guidepost through our experience. And the experiences can be a day long, a 3 day, or a 5 day, such as the one in Ghost Ranch coming up. What happens there is men and women begin to realize that, oh, okay, if I'm going to share, which is already kind of, you know, a little nervous to share deeply and intimately, this is important to know that there's safety foundations in place.
So what does that actually look like? Like, how do you set that up? It's not getting people on two sides of a room, you know, to as you say, where they might end up sort of yelling at each other or getting tense and...
Correct. The first thing we talk about is confidentiality, that whatever goes on in this experience stays in this experience. Even within the experience, we talk about confidentiality, that if I'm in a small group, I'm not going to share with others that weren't in my small group unless I ask permission. We first create an agreement that we're all here for healing intentions, to grow closer, to have better understanding. And that's a big piece, because a lot of people come to different types of experiences for all kinds of reasons, not necessarily for healing reasons. So that creates a nice foundation. Another agreement we talk about is honoring the experiences of others. So really being open to hearing and taking in their experiences. We talk about mindful communication. We talk about noble silence. We talk about taking responsibility for your own experiences, not projecting. A big thing we talk about is how to share, using I statements, talking about your own personal story. You know, we can all read the book. We can all listen to the tape. We can all... we don't need any pontification. What we want is personal sharing, so that I understand what you've gone through,
right.
That helps me to feel connected to you.
And one of the things that I think would probably be a temptation in situations like that is for people to start making generalizations like men are like this, women are like that.
Correct. And as facilitators, we step in right away and stop that because it's not accurate. It's not accurate in any way. And it doesn't help me to know you. And for men and women who have had very little or no experience in an environment where we can actually get to know each other, it's fundamental. So, yes, we avoid big, broad-based statements. We bring it back to I, and we share our own stories. I know in therapy, and I, being a therapist, you know that it's not always vogue to rehash the story. Well, in gender healing work, because we've never heard each other's stories, it becomes a place for us to start connecting. And when I can hear what you've been through, it helps me to open up my heart a little more. And that's where healing really happens.
Some of the gender reconciliation work is based in countries like South Africa and India, where there are problems that make probably most middle-class American listeners' problems seem relatively mild. I mean, women getting acid thrown on them and widows being thrown out of their homes and women being raped and things like that. Have you witnessed that work?
I've not had a chance to go with GRI, and I'll say GRI, Gender Reconciliation International, to South Africa yet. I've been invited, but I haven't gone yet, or to India. And we do work in both of those countries. There, things, as you say, are more overt. Some of the things you mentioned. I mean, in South Africa, there is all kinds of cultural ideas that men believe in order to ward off AIDS or HIV, have sex with virginal girls. You know, so a lot of it is learning how to change the culture, which is very indoctrinated in long periods of time, believing this is the way we do it. In our country, you know, I want to say, well, we don't have overt acting out, but all you have to do is look at the acting out on campus. All you have to do is look at the rape crisis we have on the campuses of our finest colleges. And
not to mention the military.
And not to mention the military, exactly. So you begin to see that there is overt acting out here in this country, but predominantly there's a lot of more covert, subtle acting out, and that falls under the area of our conditioning and how men are conditioned and how women are conditioned generally. And you see it, you see it all the time. My partner and I recently watched a show about female actors in Hollywood and how difficult it was for them to get roles as they got older where men could continue to get the same roles. We can go on and talk about the disparity in pay. We can, you know, there's lots of imbalances occurring in this country.
When you think about what some of these things have in common, I mean, the horrifying violence against women in other countries, the rape on college campuses, rape in the military, rape, all, you know, date rape. I mean, it's everywhere. And violence and domestic violence and all this stuff. Do you, as a psychotherapist, have any insights that you can share with us about what's going on with that? Like, why would a man want to hurt a woman who is, you know, basically almost never, unless she's like some kind of karate person or whatever, going to be able to defend herself?
Right.
What? Why?
Yeah, it's a difficult but important question. You know, when we look at our system now, and I guess I we need to name that system, we're still in a patriarchal system. This system is and has been male dominated. And out of that domination, men take on a level of privilege. And that privilege is that I can do what I want to do, and I can do whatever I, whenever I want to. And so there's a belief that I can meet my own needs whenever I want to, and often that comes at the cost of another. A lot of the acting out does happen, and to be honest with you, a lot of the acting out happens between men and men, men acting out on men. Not to take away from men acting out on women. But I think we have to talk about this concept of privilege. And in our culture, especially for white men, there is an immense amount of privilege, a belief that it's not said, but it's a belief that I'm superior. and that I have more power, more clout, more rank in our world. And when men begin to look at this, which is a big deal to get men to kind of buy into any kind of reconciliation work, because they don't have a problem. The general population of men are good men, but are often not aware of their thought processes or their privilege. And so it's a little more difficult to get men to buy in. Women buy in. Whenever I've done workshops for men and women around gender healing, predominantly, and as you could guess, more women sign up, more women are interested. Fewer men sign up, fewer men tend to be interested. So when we look at privilege, you see that there's been historical, I mean, I don't know, you're a pretty good student of history, and you can look back over the hundreds of years, thousands of years, and see the dominance that men have taken and used that power, and oftentimes considering women as simply another object or thing. So there's a dehumanizing effect here that is really a problem.
It seems to me that you're talking about a couple of different things. I mean, one is the kind of privilege that a lot of men have, even in my lifetime and even today, taken for granted, which is that women will provide unpaid labor. They will do, you know, wifely things, and they'll cook and clean and raise kids and do dishes and pay bills and keep everything together for free. And very few, I don't know any women who have that in a man, like who have a husband who will do those things. There, it may exist somewhere. There might be three in the city of Santa Fe. There might be more. I really don't know. But I haven't heard of a single one of them, and that's not the norm. And it's easy to, when that is your cultural norm, to take that for granted. And there have been cases, and I know some of those cases, where it's actually worked pretty well, and there's a lot of love there, and the woman may or may not feel unfulfilled by the time her kids are grown and whatever. And that's, you know, that's a kind of privileged situation that we can talk about forever. But then there's this other thing, which is committing acts of violence. And that's more than, I mean, you said, you know, men can get their needs met whenever they want. Acts of violence is not about getting your needs met. It's about hurting somebody. And where does that impulse to hurt women come from?
Well, I don't know if I have the exact answer as to where that comes from, but in order to hold your position of power, you tend to dominate. And so there is this, when you're acting out and hurting women, you're dominating. You're actually, and so if men, here's where we want to go when we look at men. We want to look at a wound that men carry. And that is that there's actually an awful lot of insecurity in men around feeling okay about who they are without having to be powerful or dominate. You notice most of the men in our American culture that we look up to are powerful men. And this doesn't have much to do per se with the quality of man or the heart of man, but a lot of men are grown up in a certain condition to believe that in order to be a strong man, a powerful man, the right man, and this comes, I grew up with this type of belief, then you need to behave and act a certain way. And that tends to be around the belief about being strong, powerful, dominant. And so this comes across still today. I've been with young men when asked, what does it mean to be a man? The first thing out of their mouth is strong. Not heartful. Not even wise.
And what does strong mean?
Yeah, see, and that's the question. When left to a lot of young men who are unmentored and uninitiated into a healthy male world, young men look to modeling, and there they see strong means being physically strong, and being physically strong means being able to act out or protect yourself or fight. Every generation has a culture of young men growing up uninitiated who look to these sort of strange archetypal models of maleness. I mean, you know, in the 40s and 50s, John Wayne was that archetype. And we've had varying versions of that for decades, even before that. And part of that is that when you look at men in relation to women, there is a certain sort of way that that man is to be in relationship with woman. And one way they are not to be is vulnerable. And when they're vulnerable, they actually stand a chance of becoming intimate because they're having to talk about what they're actually feeling, what's actually occurring inside. And the conditioned box that most men grow up in does not talk about that and doesn't sponsor about that. Matter of fact, when men are together and see often, not always, but often other men being vulnerable, it's amazing how quick they're called a sissy, a wimp, a fag, whatever. And so men force themselves into a very tight box that's very limited as to the expression of maleness. For years, I did work with men back in, I'm from Maine originally, so in the 80s, myself and a few other guys formed a men's movement and organization there in Maine. And then I'm a part of Mexico Men's Wellness here. And it's amazing working with men and moving through that conditioning. It's a big deal. But in all the years working with men, what I realized was, yes, I'm personally getting better as a man, getting better to relate with men, working through my old conditioning, but I realized I don't know much about women. And so that's what led me to kind of segue here into this gender work, because I had not known of any type of work that created an environment where men and women could come and work together.
We're talking to therapist Shel Goldman about gender reconciliation. It seems like there's multiple fronts on which gender reconciliation can move forward, and one of them is the kind of thing you're talking about, which is psychological change. I mean, working in the way you describe it is very much of a healing and sort of spiritual, if you want to call it that, situation where people can talk to each other and feel vulnerable. Another way is the legal way. I mean, we've had now in your lifetime and mine many changes that allow women to, well, it's before our lifetimes, but you know, women couldn't own property at a certain point. We couldn't vote at a certain point. We couldn't get credit at a certain point. We couldn't, and we're still way behind in getting, you know, maternity leave and family leave and that kind of thing. But how do you weigh this question of like the structural, like the sort of infrastructural legal and cultural system in which we live, and then this personal express, like how do those things work together?
Well, that's a great question. First off, we have to, like you said, we have to really see that a lot has happened in this past 100 years for women, for women's rights. I mean, the 60s, the women's movement was a fundamental piece. And, you know, women's rights are human rights. And that was came out in a conference in 92, an international conference, where the rights of women are seen as human rights. And that was a big deal. That was a big pivotal moment. It's taken decades since then, and it's still in process to get these shifts to occur. And it's sometimes slow going. Again, remember, the power has been held predominantly by men. And if men are not, as I said, moved or to buy into this, then they're more reluctant to make change. But what we're noticing on a sort of a organizational level is that when men and women are in a more equal setting, more happens. There's more of humanity coming together, not just the typical male traits, but the female energies and benefits come together, and corporations are seeing that this is beneficial for them. Many structures are seeing that when we can create an environment of balance for men and women, the structure itself works better.
Is there some kind of statistics on when women are on the boards of major corporations?
Correct.
They're more profitable?
Correct.
Which is counterintuitive to all the norms about how boards should be run aggressively and
correct.
All that.
Well, you know, for years the message was bottom line. And as women come more into organizations, they don't look necessarily at bottom line. They look at the people involved in the structure. And if the people aren't happy, if they're not motivated, if they're not in some way inspired by what they're doing, then, you know, the bottom line doesn't matter. So in a lot of ways, bringing a woman's view into corporate or structures of that nature has been really beneficial.
For the bottom line.
Exactly, but without talking bottom line, looking broader and wider and deeper instead of just bottom line.
What you're talking about brings up a word that I keep thinking about, which is reciprocity. Like there's in, I think, any healthy relationship, company, you know, family, garden, ecosystem, whatever. I mean, name your living system.
Right.
If there's a true give and take, it works better than if somebody's just trying to get something out of somebody else.
And that's the buy-in. You have to see that there is benefit when we both win. But that takes a shift in consciousness. And a big part of what occurs in a gender reconciliation experience is that men and women have a chance. When we come together, for those days, we are the world. I don't want to sound like a Michael Jackson song, but we are the world. That we are the men representing men, and we are the women representing women. And for 3 days, we come together in sort of this cloistered forum, and that's where we get to learn about each other, which changes consciousness. It just doesn't happen out on the street. It just doesn't happen in our basic world. It doesn't even happen that often in our love-based relationships. Not that this work is about love-based relationships, but so this is unique in the sense that when I can hear you and truly listen without a lot of crosstalk, without a lot of rebuttal or defendedness, when I can actually listen to you, I can learn something. That raises my consciousness. That changes the way I see woman. And when women can sit and listen to men and hear about their wounds, hear about their conditioning, hear about their struggles, which is phenomenal, they learn about men and their consciousness changes. So that's, if anything, we hope to do in GRI experiences is to raise consciousness about each other.
The work that you're talking about inevitably brings up questions about gender roles. And most traditional cultures have separate roles for men and women, whereas in industrial society we have a whole lot more overlap. Does gender reconciliation work? I mean, is it better when roles are less defined? Does it work if you have very separate roles for men and women?
You know, we don't really, in our work, the work is very experiential. First, I want to just share. We're not lecturers. We don't create a lot of didactic process. A lot of it is setting up environments and experiences where men and women can learn directly from each other through these experiences. So we don't really talk about roles per se, but one of the things we're noticing is that when men and women show up, oftentimes it's interesting. I've sat in many of these circles for years, and it's amazing to hear men speak about the rigidity of their roles and what a burden it is to carry the roles that they, as conditioned men, have had to carry, that they would like to be free of some of these roles and have more freedom or flexibility. I mean, I can remember one man saying, I'm so sick of having to wear only black or blue pants. I'd like to wear, you know, just in the way that they dress, but more in the way that they carry themselves. There's a very rigid box that most men live in, and it creates depression and it creates addiction. And so when we talk about roles, we're actually talking about maybe just letting men and women open the box that they're forced into and see that there's a greater playing field. Already in the past 50 years, we've seen women do all kinds of things that men do. And actually, I think they're sort of ahead of men in many ways as far as busting out of roles. A lot of men that I know and men that I'm aware of on a larger scope are basically struggling. They don't know how to define themselves without being the man that they were taught to be.
When they do break out of that, and you've seen that and perhaps experienced that yourself and in your own life and that of your maybe close friends, family, whatever, when they do break out of that and they start having more flexibility in deciding what they want to do and what they want to wear and stuff like that, do they get have you noticed that you or they get pushback from the world around them?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a really funny thing. Systems like to enforce the system. And so if there is a way that you're supposed to be a man, and again, this isn't out on a billboard somewhere. It's a very unspoken code. You bet there's pushback. And it starts at an early age. For instance, in school, when boys want to be more creative, when boys want to express their feelings more, when boys want to be more affectionate, they get a ton of kickback from other boys who believe that's a threat to my developing boyhood / manhood.
I see it as so different now, though. I mean, I've met, like, high school kids who are boys and girls giving each other hugs incessantly and talking about their relationships with each other and things like that. Things that when I was in high school would have been unheard of.
Right, right. Agreed. I definitely agree with that. But when we talk, in this case, just about boys, oftentimes you can still see that boys limit themselves based on what their father or men are modeling and or what the models that they watch, whether it's a show, a game, something that they see. They still see pretty defined roles or looks of what it means to be a boy or to be a man. So, you know, this is a wonderful time right now where we're busting open a lot of doors around gender and sexuality. The spectrum is huge. It is not binary. It is plural in the greatest sense of the word. And although that's confusing for a lot of folks, it's also exciting. It means that we can be who we want to be. And that's going to take time because it is going to push up against a status quo that feels threatened by that.
I think there's maybe a kind of double standard with that, in the sense that if a woman wants to be androgynous, or if she wants to wear men's clothes, or if she wants to do a quote-unquote male profession, she's not going to get, I mean, she might get some pushback in fields like construction work. I mean, I've heard stories about that, but in many cases, she's just, you know, cool. She's doing something that makes her seem stronger, but the other direction, not so much. I knew a guy who, when I lived back east, there was a conference that I went to every year, and there was a man who was actually a construction worker who showed up every year. It was a weekend conference, in a pink chiffon dress, wore the dress the whole weekend. Nobody in his family knew, and he was happy, and they would go back home to his family, and there we have it.
Yeah, I feel that men are behind in this area. Not that I'm, you know, saying all men need to wear pink tutus, but what I'm saying here is that we still feel, as a collective group, very limited in our self-expression. And so part of what comes from gender healing work is not just between men and women. Our circles also include the healing between men and men and the healing between women and women. There's living under the heavy yoke of patriarchy, there's a lot of wounding that has happened within each gender. And this has been devastating to a lot of men. You know, the suicide rates are quite high for men, especially young men. Their pressure to perform, to go out there and to make it happen and to know everything and figure things out is overwhelming, especially when there really isn't anybody modeling what that looks like, just that's what you're supposed to do.
And I found that there are, unfortunately, and it took me a while to actually see this, but there's a lot of really sexist women.
Yeah, there's a lot of everything.
We as women have internalized that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the message was, that's important for you as a woman to be that way. So, yeah, no, absolutely. I want to give, if it's okay with you, I'd like to shift just slightly and talk about a few of the principles that our work is based upon. And I think it would be interesting to your listeners. One of the thing is that our work is best done in groups or communities. You can't do gender healing work by yourself. You can't do it by reading a book. You have to do it in the company of other men and other women. So that's a big deal to create these little circles. And they're happening, by the way, all over the world. We're doing this, as I said, in South Africa, India. We're in Australia. We're in Colombia. We're moving into Spain in November. We're in this country. there's a lot of this work happening. By the way, we're also in partnership with the Desmond Tutu Legacy Foundation. Reverend Desmond Tutu finds this work one of the best works for actual healing, and they embrace it in South Africa. The other is that, as we now know, and we're talking about this, that gender represents a vast spectrum of personal, social, and collective identities that are rapidly shifting across the globe. And without getting too much into that, we need diversity to give ourselves permission to be our wholeness. And part of that is, as you said, this role thing. Well, maybe I'm finding the limitations of my old conditioned self too limiting, and I want to open, but I don't know what that looks like. If I'm sitting in a council where another man or woman or group is modeling something or talking about something, that opens me up to the possibilities for myself. And that's an important ingredient in the healing of men and women. Another part of this is that there is equal value placed on what we'll call feminine principles or perspectives and masculine perspectives. They're both honored and both appreciated. Again, I don't want to talk too much about the binary concepts because of how vast and fluid this is all becoming. The other thing that's important here with our work is that there is a spiritual foundation. The founders of this work, Will Keepin and Cynthia Bricks, are both very deeply involved in interfaith and interspiritual communities and create conferences on that. And basically we're talking about that these world principles that are based in all spiritual practices and religious groups are invited as a part of the basis of this work. When your heart opens to another, it becomes a larger process. We're no longer in our heads just intellectually understanding, but we're actually having an experience. And there it becomes quite spiritual. So that's another principle here. The other is that the process of this work requires the fullness of our humanity. When we sit together, we're integrating our physical, our emotional, intellectual, and our spiritual dimensions to create a condition for general transformation. The more people can show up, the more they can share, the more they can talk about, not that our focus is on this, but the more they can talk about their pain and suffering, the more I can understand the other. And that's just not happening. We're actually sort of taught not to go there. We're taught to say everything's fine and that we're great and life is good. And I'm not saying it isn't, but if I'm to understand how you've been wounded, I need to hear your story. And that's a big part of this work. There's one more principle I'd like to add to this, and it's kind of my favorite, and that is that transforming gender relations is absolutely uncharted territory. There are no guidebooks, there are no roadmaps, and no major society on earth is gender healed or balanced. So in a lot of ways, it's sort of the final frontier. We used to call ourselves gender knots, like after astronauts, because we're kind of out there exploring what this looks like. We as facilitators of this work make no claims to have definitive answers for transforming these gender issues. The territory is uncharted, and as I said, there are no experts, yet we learn by showing up in a safe, experiential processes that give people a chance to sort of go in, have an experience, and then come back out and talk about it. And that's where the healing dynamics happen. And basically, I've found over time that the healing moments have consistently outweighed the difficulties, and that there's a lot of inspiration and renewed confidence when men and women leave these workshops and go back out into the world.
Do they ever get into, like, fights with each other? Like, moments of tension?
Yes, and that dynamic tension is important because when you start to pull that curtain back and see the wounds that are underlying in our culture, it is important. There are going to be men and women that are going to be upset or angry or have old anger or old rage. But we work it in a way where it's safe, where it is not volatile. And at the end of all of our processes, we create what I would call an honoring ceremony, where the men and women, based on the work we've done, which is a piece of work, you know, over that period of time, we come up with a beautiful, unique, authentic kind of in the moment little healing rituals that honor each group, each gender. And there was a day long that happened just recently where during that closing process, men were so deeply touched that they were bowing at the feet of the women in honor of them, and women were standing there with tears streaming down their face. I don't know how it gets much better. So I'm very hopeful about this work, and every group I've ever done, I walk away personally renewed.
I think the kind of elephant in the room about this work also is that it's ultimately, if it were to be done, if it could be done on a larger scale, and you know, not everybody's called to this, but if it could be, it's peace work. I mean, you go through this stuff and you're a lot less likely to make war.
Correct. Well, you've had a chance to really know someone and to know someone who's at least on the surface different than you. One of the beautiful things that comes out of these experiences, whether it's been a 1 day or a 3 day or a 5 day, is people end up saying this over and over, wow, we're not that different.
Yeah, right.
And that is a big deal. And so I agree with you. It's our way of creating peacemaking. And we need that in our world right now.
You are going to be co-leading a 5 day workshop at Ghost Ranch coming up in August. It's August 10th to 14th.
Right.
And you're going to be doing some other things too. How can people find out more about your work?
Well, thanks for that. Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. Ghost Ranch, a wonderful place, is supporting a 5 day experience with us. We're calling it Reforming Gender Relations, a Spiritual Revolution. And it takes place August 10th through the 14th. And I would have folks directly contact Ghost Ranch at ghostranch.org, or you could call the office at 505-685-1001 to register. And this is an exceptional place, by the way, to do this type of work. I don't know if all of you have been up to Ghost Ranch. Amazing place.
It's so beautiful.
Very beautiful. And I know they had some struggles with flooding recently, but they will come through it. This is an exceptional group that we are inviting people from different university campuses. So there's going to be a lot of folks here, and this is going to be a grand opportunity to deepen in. In the middle of that week, there'll be a day-long breathwork process, which is a wonderful addendum to this work. So that's August 10th through the 14th. Myself and Cynthia Bricks, the co-founder of this work, are going to be a part of Southwestern College's upcoming conference, Transformation and Healing Conference, called Diversity, Healing, and Consciousness, August 26th to the 29th. And on the 27th, that's Thursday, at 9 in the morning till noon, Cynthia and I are going to be doing a three-hour sort of small group breakout around, we're calling it Transforming Patriarchy in Academia, Love and Justice via Gender Reconciliation. So it'd be a chance to come up to the college and experience a little bit of what we do. And then on the 29th, that's a Saturday, we're going to be offering a day-long. While Cynthia's here in town, she comes in from Washington. She and I are going to be doing a day-long here in Santa Fe from 9 to 6. And I would say please reach out to me personally, and you can reach me at shellgoldman, two L's in shell, at gmail.com for more information on the Saturday, August 29th day-long.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you so much, Shell Goldman, for being with us on the Radio Cafe. Shell is a psychotherapist and a workshop leader. It's just great to talk about this stuff with you.
Thanks. It's important that we're having this. I appreciate you having me on. And we both experienced that wonderful Latin band the other night. I wish we could do gender healing through Latin.
Through salsa.
Yes, I have to
tell you, I mean, salsa music and dancing, which I took up like a long time ago now,
right.
Has been, it sounds so goofy to use these words, but it was really healing for me because in this funny way, there is, when you grow up with very high expectations as a female, you don't necessarily feel like you can just let your femininity rip.
Yeah.
And salsa is a place where you can do that.
It really is. It's a beautiful way for men and women, women and women, men and men, to share a very sensual but safe environment dancing together. And the other night was fabulous. So maybe we'll incorporate some salsa dancing into our upcoming workshops. Thanks again,
Shell.